Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 240.
This week on the podcast, the Senate-Gorsuch showdown leads us to wonder, to what degree has civilization always been just hanging on by a tiny thread?
Plus, even experts don't seem to know if we're at war with Syria.
And the trailer for White House Purge Part 1 is finally released.
And it's round 2 and the Republicans are still not eager to replace Obamacare with their chamois plan.
Very little intelligence is available on the House Intelligence Committee, even in Nunes' absence.
Plus, Bernie Sanders is taking a national tour like a literal rock star.
And Michelle Bachmann, a totally irrelevant person who is no longer serving in office, still can't stop explaining it all.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You guys, it's kind of lucky that we didn't record on Sunday like we normally do, because the most hilarious scandal in the whole world broke today.
Yeah, we'll get to it later.
We're going to get to it later
because there were bigger stories of the week.
There were more important stories this week, but yeah. In some ways there weren't more important
right.
stories this
exactly.
week.
Yeah.
And I feel gratified that we're going to be able to cover this as breaking news.
So hang in till later in the podcast, guys.
You're going to want to listen to the whole
listen
podcast.
To us talk about world affairs.
Right.
Which
once we get past the terrible stuff, by the way, there's going to be some fun stuff in this podcast.
Yeah,
because the White House is falling apart completely.
Right, totally.
So get excited about that. Happy Passover,
which I was on my way over to Lila's house tonight. I was listening to MSNBC and Brian Williams reminded me that that meant that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were going to be off the job for the next 3 days. So let's hope
that the world survives.
I mean,
keep an eye on Twitter.
Right.
Steve
Bannon is running the ship right now.
That's a true story.
We're going to talk in a little bit about maybe how his power was waning a little bit. So the next 72 hours, he's probably going to try and do all he can to really turn shit up.
This is either we're going to be stronger for this week or we're going to be dead. So get excited about that.
Yeah, exactly.
The Trump Kushners are the one family that I don't wish a happy Passover to. I hope that they have a fine
such a terrible
Passover
that they have to come back to work tomorrow morning.
I hope that their Passover is interrupted by their need to work.
I know.
I feel like we can't afford to have them off the job for this long.
No.
Holy Week's a bunch of bullshit. Nobody cares about religion. God. In any case, last week, the world came crumbling down around us.
And we live in a new world right now.
We live in a new world. It's a world where it turns out, this has always been the world, by the way. I feel like one thing I should remember as I drop things about this world is that it always could have been the world. And in the sense that we had the option to have this be the world the whole time, it has been the world the whole time. Because that's my roundabout way of saying that they changed the rules for in the Senate for confirming Supreme Court justices. And Gorsuch is now our ninth Court justice.
Yeah. Turns out you can just change any rule when you want.
And you can do it with a simple majority. So it turns out that this cloture vote, you know, filibuster-proof majority nonsense has always been hanging on by a thread, and it's always been a sham, because the majority could decide at any moment that we don't need filibusters anymore.
Yeah.
That basically this rule, and we told this to you back when that filibuster showdown was happening in the first place. We talked about this in our filibuster blog post.
Yeah.
But I had sort of forgotten how we've always been hanging on by a thread until we suddenly
weren't anymore.
Yeah, until we were in the pocket of Mad Men, just waiting to see where the wind blew us.
Yes.
So in any case, on Thursday, the cloture vote failed.
And they didn't get 60 votes.
McConnell was like, fuck this.
Screw it, guys.
Yeah. It's no skin off my back
if
I turn out to be an evil asshole who doesn't actually care about the safe functioning of the country.
Yeah.
And it's not. Because he's like 1,000 years old and he doesn't really care what happens anymore. Exactly.
Yeah.
So in any case, the vote to change the rules was a party line vote, which
I'm
means
shocked.
They only 52 votes voted yes, but that
was
enough to
change
the rules.
That's enough to change the 60 vote rule.
So it turns out that the 60 vote rule isn't a rule. It's not a thing, you guys. The rules were initially, the first confirmation rules were changed in 2013. Remember this deal? We talked about it at the time.
Yes.
McConnell said to the Democrats, you'll regret this.
Yep.
We do.
But
it was to stop Republicans from filibustering literally every minor nominee that
every
Obama tried
that came in
to
front of
appoint.
Them. Yes.
And so at the time they left the filibuster for Supreme Court justices in place.
Right.
But I think that gave them the sort of like idea
Yes.
That they could break this precedent.
And it's been festering in their tiny brains
ever since
for the last 4 years.
It's real rich because literally every member of the Senate was like, this is a very low day for us. But they all just blamed each other.
I know.
McConnell had the audacity to say something that I've wanted to punch him in the face before. I feel like in this moment, I could
physically... He has a punchable face.
He's a very punchable face. Yeah. It's that weird chin that he has.
Yeah.
But he had the audacity to say, this is the latest escalation on the left's never-ending judicial war. Mm. The most audacious yet. Not the time, by the way, that they refused to, you know, allow a Supreme Court justice vote to go through, even though there was a year left on the president's term.
Right.
And it cannot and will not stand. There cannot be two sets of standards, one for the nominees of the Democratic president and another for the nominees of the Republican president. That's real rich coming from a man who created the different standard for Merrick Garland, who apparently that wasn't different standards, that was just different rules. Different rules and different standards are apparently two different things.
Right.
But the standard that they set was that you can't appoint someone in your final term. Now, interestingly, Chuck Schumer, as sort of a performative flourish during this debate, seized the floor to ask if there were any rules or precedents that prohibited the Senate from, quote, considering and voting on a nominee to the Supreme Court in the fourth year of a president's term, which was their justification for denying Garland a hearing. Deb Fischer of Nebraska, she was the Republican who was presiding over the Senate at that moment, said, the chair is not aware of any such prohibition in its rules or precedents. Literally, fuck everybody.
Yeah.
Fuck all of you. Come on.
Yep.
Like, in any case, we should remind you at this point that RBG is 84.
Yep.
Kennedy is 80 and Breyer is 78.
Yeah.
So basically everyone is on death's door in the Supreme Court right now.
That's right.
We are in the first year of a madman's presidency. Yeah. We have a Senate that is not interested in cooperating with anyone except themselves or even with themselves to some degree.
Oh, God.
And so in any case, and Ed Markey said that if the Democrats retake control of the Senate, they'll restore the 60-vote filibuster rule, which is just like Democrats.
I know. This is why they're getting steamrolled all the time.
Come on.
Just statements like that, Ed Markey.
Like, we tried to do the fair thing once.
Right.
They steamrolled us.
Yes.
Those aren't the rules anymore.
No.
The rules are the rules.
No.
I mean, they decided to change the rules at a time that was convenient for them after denying a hearing to a fully available appointed judge. And they didn't vote him down, you guys.
Right.
They denied him a hearing.
Who was not a liberal activist judge, by the way.
No, he was right in their wheelhouse.
Yes.
On top of everything else.
He's the type of person that... you are supposed to be putting on the Supreme Court.
Yeah. It's just maddening.
Yeah.
This whole thing is infuriating. And it's infuriating. He was sworn in today. That infuriated me today. On Friday, I was infuriated because he was confirmed.
Uh-huh.
I've been infuriated about this
every time
that I've opened a newspaper in the last week.
I know.
He had, you know, his little ceremony where Kennedy gave him the oath and... you know, he said, and then he took, Roberts gave him the constitutional oath earlier in a private ceremony.
Yeah.
But he's already going to have a chance to shape the shit show that's to come because he's going to take part in the court's next round of oral arguments. That starts on April 17th. And that includes a religious rights case where Missouri Church is objecting to being denied state funds for a playground project due to a ban on providing public money to religious organizations.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday, the justices have a private conference to decide which cases to take up. So he'll also be able
to help decide
which cases they even hear. There are cases where a gun rights activist wants to expand gun rights to include carrying concealed firearms.
And
public is going to love that one. They want to reinstate the North Carolina voting restrictions that the lower court said were specifically designed to suppress black voter turnout.
He'll like that.
He wants to hear, there's a case where a Christian bakery owner wants to object to making a cake for gay people. They love hearing about gay people's wedding cakes.
I mean, obviously, the whole changing the rules of the filibuster is a fucking disaster. Don't get me wrong. And also, I think Gorsuch himself is a disaster, and would I have preferred Merrick Garland 100%. If those people who are you just said were on death's door...
It doesn't change the makeup of the court, except that... We already know who's on death's door. Scalia, didn't see coming.
That was a surprise. And that's what I'm saying. What I am saying is if some of these people can hang on, and I know that at least a couple of them will try. I mean, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg intends to try. Yeah. She's not going to resign. She's in good shape. That's right. Her workout
apparently
can't be done by somebody a third of her age, as we learned from Politico a couple months ago. But there will be... I, I, I still think a lot of these sort of like wacko things that some of the Republican justices are going to want to hear and want to do are still going to probably get shot down 5-4.
Oh, I think that's probably true.
But I'm not saying, I'm just sort of like trying to like not, you know, I just don't want to panic. Yeah, I just don't want you to live in fear for the next 3 years. You probably will be for various other reasons, because we're about to talk about how we're, you know, maybe going to war with Russia.
But we're in a fuzzy war.
That's a separate issue. But I mean, you know.
But the concern here is just that in changing the rules, they're able to have an immediate impact 100%. On the outcome of these court cases
yes.
in a process that is patently undemocratic, because a Democratic yes. president was denied the right yes. to even have his person heard.
100%.
You know? So, like, in that case, we were robbed as Democrats of a choice.
Yes.
And so whether or not this affects the outcome of the court, the point is the court is supposed to evolve with the times.
Correct.
And this doesn't allow the court to do that.
Right.
Because there was an artificial decision yes. made on the part of assholes
right.
who decided that it was better for the American people that the process not work the way that it right. was supposed to, according to the Constitution.
Yeah.
In any case, in a real rich
yeah.
turn of events, though,
they still really want to keep it around.
They still want to keep the filibuster for legislation. 61 yeah. senators signed a letter that was spearheaded by Susan Collins and Chris Coons. I bet Susan Collins is quaking in her fucking boots.
Right.
Because she should be worried at some point about losing her seat over just the general change in the way that the Republicans do business.
Yeah.
But also, she does exist in a Senate that is a sort of consensus-driven, yes. slow, deliberative body of people who yes. don't, who aren't lunatics.
Yes.
She wants to live in that
the
Senate.
The same one that Mitch McConnell claimed to live in.
Exactly. She wants to live in that Senate, and she yeah. is well, currently she not being given the chance. She could have fucking stood up.
Yeah, she could have voted differently in that.
In any case.
52-48
Some interesting people did and did not sign this letter.
Yeah.
61 senators signed it. But yeah. among them was not some of our big firebrands on the left and right. Liz yeah. Warren did not sign it. Bernie yeah. Sanders did not sign it. Ted Cruz did not sign it. Rand Paul did not sign it.
Yeah.
And of the senior members of the Senate leadership teams on the right and left, there were some that signed. Debbie Stabenow signed it. Roy Blunt and John Thune, both Republicans, signed it. But John Cornyn, Majority Whip, did not sign it. Dick Durbin, Minority Whip, didn't sign it. And Patty Murray, who's sort of like in that weird place where Dick Durbin and her are kind of yeah. sharing a job, but she right. somehow is third because right. she's a woman or whatever. She didn't sign it.
Yeah.
McConnell said he supports keeping the legislative filibuster alive.
Yeah. I think some of these people didn't sign it because they didn't want to give their leadership cover, sort of, almost, on some level. Do you know what I mean? Bob Corker,
which is maybe the first time I've agreed with Bob Corker ever, basically said that.
Oh, yeah.
He said,
yeah.
I don't care what letters are being signed and presented, and I know there are good intentions on people who are getting letters signed, but in many ways, it gives both of the leaders cover yeah. over what just happened, doesn't
yeah.
it? And he's right.
It does.
I didn't think we'd agree on something this this sort of in GOP favoring.
No,
but here we are.
Yeah.
Maybe me and Bob Corker could get through a dinner together without murdering each other, you know?
Perhaps.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to.
I was going
to
say,
here we are.
Let's not ever have to find out.
Well, you know, it's like, you know how I always think about which senators I would have fun at dinner with?
Mm-hmm.
And I still yeah. stand by my assessment that Lindsey Graham would be a fun dinner guest.
Totally.
I mean, probably a great storyteller. We know he's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably fun.
He likes to tell a joke. It's not funny. It's like a,
right.
you know, an unfunny dad politician
yeah.
joke. But like, that's the type of person that like,
yeah,
you
he'd be
wouldn't
fun at dinner.
Punch in the throat.
And yeah. he'd probably argue with you for fun.
Oh, I
don't
think
you
so
feel
too.
Like Lindsey
yeah,
Graham?
He'd get off on
he'd
that.
Get off
yeah.
on that. Yeah,
uh-huh.
that's. I feel like I'd never thought about that with Bob Corker, but
no,
you know,
me either.
What are you gonna do?
No.
In any case, so there's this. There's a chance that we went to war last week.
Yeah.
Nobody seems clear, experts included. I heard multiple interviews where someone was like, "So does this mean we're at war?" And an expert literally said, "I'm not sure."
Right.
And then there was one interview that was on the, you know, the New York Times has that Daily Minute.
No, it's
NPR. They have like a daily podcast that's just like 14 minutes that catches you up or whatever.
Yeah.
And the interview on that, literally the person goes, yeah, I'm not really sure. Also, I got to answer the phone. Got to go. Bye.
That's so good. Yeah.
In any case, this all began because there was a chemical bomb attack in a part of northern Syria that is rebel held.
Yeah.
That the Turkish health ministry has now confirmed was sarin gas, which is banned.
Banned.
By treaties.
And not
such.
Only is it banned, but we were told by Assad himself
they didn't
and
have any.
Also by Putin that they didn't have any.
Right.
Putin had assured the world
that Assad trustworthy Putin, who always followed through on right, because remember in 2013 something like this happened. There was a sarin attack in Damascus, and that was when we had our little red line conversation, and we were maybe going to invade, but then we didn't because we made a Russia brokered this deal with Assad that they would get rid of their sarin supplies, and everything was hunky dory. But this attack, like the last one, was likely carried out by Assad's forces.
Yes.
And
they claim that it was carried out by the rebels, Assad's forces.
That's what you say.
But that's what you say.
Almost
but
no evidence points to the fact that it was carried out by the rebels, though.
And the rebels don't have the ability to carry, even if they had the sarin. They don't have the plane
to put the sarin in.
They don't have the capability to actually be doing this.
Dropping a sarin bomb is hard.
I was going to say, dropping a sarin bomb is hard, and we'll get to that in just a second.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, why would you, it also doesn't make any sense.
Right,
to do
why would you
either.
Sarin gas your own people?
There it is.
I mean, in some senses, Assad also sarin gassed his own people,
In all the senses, he sarin gassed his own people. Yes.
But so, this is a complicated issue, because Russia are big Assad backers.
That's the thing, and I think a lot of people forget about this, is that Syria now basically exists as like a Russian outpost.
Yeah.
I mean, they
the
are
the Syria
sort of,
that is Assad Syria. And
right,
that's
exactly.
part of why the civil war, as always, is not just a civil war.
Yeah, I mean, they are functioning as like an annex of Russia, Syria right now. And that's important to remember. Whenever you hear anything about Syria, you could truly just substitute Russia for it. And you really should. Because
that's important
context for all of this.
It's interesting that we are now involved in this situation, because I was under the impression that we are now part of the USSR of its modern incarnation.
And that is where...
And so is Assad's government.
Yeah.
And that's where this got a little bit concerning, or a little confusing. Because, so, Assad's government had signed this treaty. Their explanation of what happened is that rebels had done it, and there was an air raid on an insurgent depot. That doesn't hold any water from anyone who has any facts.
Right.
86 people are dead. 28 were children. But that doesn't even include victims that were sent to Turkey, who then died.
Right.
Erdogan said that it killed more than 100 people.
Yep.
UNICEF said that 546 people were injured, a lot of them children.
Yeah.
It was a gross attack.
Yeah, it was.
And the pictures are horrifying.
Yeah.
And they were so horrifying
They
even horrified Donald Trump, who apparently only has the ability to empathize with images that are placed directly in front of him
at the moment they are there. Yeah.
Because
he still doesn't want to let him into the country.
He doesn't want to let Syrians into the country.
No.
Because they're dangerous, Brent.
I know.
You know that.
Syrian children who are getting sarin gassed
are dangerous, but also they're too cute to be sarin gassed.
Right.
I mean, we should know that.
Yeah.
So instead, we should just start bombing.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do in response to retaliate against an attack on children.
Yeah.
You don't let them in. You don't bring them to safety.
Yeah.
You bomb the guy that bombed them.
Yeah.
So
I have gone through.
Brent had a real emotional
week.
As
you know, it's been a roller coaster for me, because I texted you as I was hearing this, like, and I heard it sort of like on the radio on my way home, like, as
Brent
was
live texting
this event for me. And I texted you, and I was like, we're bombing Syria?
I was literally at a taping, just like spreading the word to everyone as Brent live texted me.
Right. And I had the initial moment, and I did put caveats with it, which I'm glad, because it sort of allowed me an out. Granted, it was only with you. It's not like I announced anything publicly, although I'm going to do it right now. But I was sort of, at the exact moment that it was happening.
Yeah, you were feeling torn.
I was feeling more than torn. Yeah. I was actually sort of feeling okay about it, actually, on some level. I mean, I am obviously against, like, a regime change, you know, at least that we are sort of responsible for. Although, I mean, I do think that he should go, obviously, because he's doing shit like this. But, I mean, like, I was sort of feeling like if this was part of, like, a plan that had a step two, which we find out now that there doesn't seem to be a
step two.
There's
never a step two with the Trump people.
There's never a step two with the Trump people. And that it was actually sort of was intended to take out some sort of infrastructure that would allow for this to stop happening, for innocent women and children to stop being sarin gassed.
Tomahawk cruise missiles at the airbase that they launched this attack.
Apparently, it's only got like two runways. It's a small airbase. But apparently, it didn't do that either, because they were running, again, within 36 hours.
It takes to run an airbase is flat land.
Right, exactly.
They have enough
of both of my caveats were quickly out the window, because it didn't seem to be part of a larger strategy. And also, you know, they're flying airplanes out of there right now.
Right.
So I am no longer in favor of it, but I'm also no longer in favor of it because the more I think about it, the more I really can take myself to some dark places.
Brent's going to a dark place. He's really wound up in a lot of conspiracy theories. And here's why. I'm gonna first give you the caveat for why.
Thank you.
So this is an attack that Trump sort of like arbitrarily decided on from Mar-a-Lago while he was looking at pictures of Syrian children or something like that.
Right.
And it was a relatively, it was a small attack in the sense that we had a very specific target. We didn't target any civilian areas. Six people died, but they were all military people. We warned the Russians on the base as part of our treaty with them that they had to get out of there before
again,
we bombed.
Remember, Russians were there.
Russians
we knew Russians were there.
Were
we
on
knew
the base.
The exact location. We can see this location.
Yeah,
we've got drones.
We know things.
We know what's going on there.
Yeah.
It's not as if we were like, ooh, where did this come? Like, we knew basically all of the appropriate details to be able to pull
and
off
so
something like this.
We were targeting, and we did it at 3 a.m. local time or 3:40 a.m. local time. So it was specifically designed to be a time when there weren't going to be people there. It wasn't going to be a lot of activity, blah, blah, blah. And it was just to get the infrastructure. Fine. But there's a few complications, one of which is that we are in this bizarre relationship with Russia.
Yes.
Russia is in a bizarre relationship with Assad. Us taking a stand, and Russia came out against our attack.
Yes.
So us taking this weird adversarial role with Russia is confusing.
Right.
There's also the fact that Trump was adamantly against intervening militarily in Syria for the entire length of his campaign.
Yeah.
And that was likely because he was being bankrolled by Russia.
I was going to say, because Trump was helping him win the election at the time.
Yeah,
so
Putin was helping him win the election. We heard from Tillerson that there's no change in our status re-Syria, but we should remind you, this is our first military intervention there. So even Obama wanted to intervene militarily. He went to Congress to get approval. They said no. Trump did not ask for congressional approval on this attack. So this was just sort of like a unilateral thing he decided
on. The reason that Obama went to Congress after the sort of debacle in Libya, which he did not ask for approval for, because all of these presidents now have this power that they basically that they gave George W. Bush after September 11th. I was reading an interview with Barbara, what's her name? Like there was only one member of the House who voted against that.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, well, obviously I would do it again.
Yes.
But anyway, so the presidents now have broad powers to sort of do things like
to commit acts
this.
Of war without
anyone's
approval.
But Obama was like, well, I'm going to go to Congress because like that Libya thing didn't go so great.
Right.
So like, let's play this like by the book here. And then they didn't vote for it. Of course, now all the people who didn't vote for it were like, yay, we bombed Syria. And
it's like, go fuck yourself,
guys. Yeah. But anyway, this has been... We've tried to do this before. We have tried to sort of, as just sort of like a limited attack, and not even necessarily to take out Assad, but like basically just to sort of like slow their roll from like doing all the awful, terrible things that they're doing to
their
own people.
But the last time that we did this, we weren't in bed with Russia. So it's a confusing time right now.
Right, exactly.
Because for this to be our first military intervention into Syria, into their civil war, for us to do it at a time when we are in bed with Russia, when Russia has intervened in our election and their candidate won, when we have people falling left and, like, resigning left and
right
all over the place and investigations going on
and
everywhere.
And to have the attack do literally nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it did truly
nothing.
Not work other than spend God knows how many millions of dollars that those 60 Tomahawks probably cost. I just
literally none of this makes sense.
It doesn't make, if you think about the whole thing, like from start to finish, like from the sarin gas attack, there's no way that Putin didn't know that the Assad regime was going to do the sarin attack, because we know that they have people on the ground there, which is why we warned them, because we weren't trying to kill the Russians, because presumably we weren't trying to start a war with Russia. But
we
also
have a treaty with Russia that says that we, you know, as part of our plan to not be at war with each other, that we warn them if we're about to commit an attack in a place that we know they are.
Right.
Like, this is part of our relationship with Russia that supposedly stops us from having a war with them.
So if we knew that they were there, and that was the air base that the sarin came out
then
of.
Then we knew.
You can't, and this is what we mentioned earlier. You can't, dropping chemical weapons is hard. You can't sneak sarin onto a plane without somebody who is there knowing that you've done it.
Right.
So
it involves like a lot of fancy hazmat suits and other things.
Like,
so
you
don't
think
kill
about
the people
it,
loading
have,
it onto the plane.
You have Russians being in Syria, knowing that Assad is about to drop chemical weapons that they claim that they don't have. Then America,
that they brokered a treaty and promised
treaty
us that
for,
Syria no longer had.
And then we mount an attack after we warn them that we make sure no one dies in that ultimately ends up doing nothing. And now I just, it can't,
I have
you can't,
two,
I can't make sense of it.
I mean, I have two extreme theories.
Yes, I do. Yes, I know.
One is.
They are shared by me. But
that Donald Trump has no rules and is a lunatic. That's a theory. I don't know if we've broached that theory yet.
Yeah.
But that theory is says that Donald Trump received this news, and because he's incapable of processing multiple pieces of information at once, he saw this news, he saw pictures of little kids dying in sarin gas attacks, and he was like, let's attack them, and did not think to himself, because he doesn't know things about things, this is actually an attack on Russia.
Yeah.
That's my first theory.
Yeah.
I think it actually might be the theory. And I think that once
it's the most plausible.
It's the most plausible theory. Because once you know, like, there are things that you set into motion just by saying that we are going to commit this attack that don't have to do with him, that are things that are done by people who know things, like to call the Russians and tell them not to be there and all that stuff. That stuff gets set into motion not by him personally, but by
experts. And to expounding upon that, I think it was the easiest thing to do. It was basically doing something, but actually doing nothing.
Exactly.
So I think that you're probably right about that. But there are more nefarious theories.
There's better theories. There's the theory that we're just all trying to start World War III.
Right. Like in collusion with all of those people. And that sounds sort of insane, but also, is it?
But there's also the theory that I think is the second most plausible theory, which is that part of what Russia's game is here is to change the subject in the U.S.
Right.
Their guy, their crown prince, is not popular here. He has the lowest approval rating of, like, any breathing human being. He's less popular than cockroaches, etc.
Yeah.
I feel like it is sort of, if you are trying to have a sort of an effect on the foreign power that you just rigged the elections for, you want your candidate to have some authority. Like some credibility.
Yeah, he has like a 30% approval rating right now, which it takes most presidents years to get to.
Exactly. So, it took him, he bought one day of positive press for this, where suddenly people were like, well, he's not the worst. And then the next day everyone was like, no, he is.
Yeah.
So this, all this bought him was one day of subject changing. But I think that Russia thought, because Americans are usually like easy to get into some sort of jingoistic fervor.
Right.
You know, like we're easy to whip up into a bunch of crazy nonsense.
I was whipped up into it for five minutes.
Exactly.
And I am now mad at myself for having been so. But you're right. It's easy to get whipped
up.
So
I think Russia could have thought, hey, you know what's an easy way to get everyone off our backs?
Yeah.
Get them all wrapped up in some war against Syria. It makes us look good because we are friends with Syria. They don't fucking care about Syria.
No.
Nobody actually cares. That's the sad part of all of this is all of Syria is a pawn in a larger Russian strategy.
I know.
They don't care about Syria.
No.
The Syrian people are not them. You know? Like, they're not like, oh, we feel for you Syrian people because we are you.
If Assad wants to kill a bunch of his own people with sarin gas, Putin is not one to tell him no.
No, I mean, exactly.
Who doesn't care?
He could kill everyone in Syria with sarin gas, and Putin would be like, as long as we can have the land, we don't fucking care.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So this is not sort of like something where they are concerned about the consequences of this action as much as they are concerned about how it makes their relationship to Assad look.
Yeah.
And that's all that they care about in this situation.
The joint attempt to start World War III is my favorite and also my least favorite.
It's really playing with Brent's mind.
It's the darkest place to go.
Yeah.
But I mean, it like makes me sort of like, I was like, oh my God, like Steve Bannon totally wants to start World War III. Like, I mean, like we know these people like want to have, you know, like my brain just like is
really easy to
believe. It had some moments.
We're in a world where you can believe it. You know?
I know.
And
that's
FYI, Brent made an important point that I think at the end of all of this is worth thinking about.
Yes.
Which is that regardless of who is elected president, we were going to bomb Syria this week.
Big time.
Because Hillary Clinton has been in favor of military intervention in Syria for years.
Yeah, and I'll tell you who, Putin would really be testing Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Like, I don't know why he would want to test Donald Trump. But
nobody knows much about what's going on with Donald Trump.
Right, exactly.
Even Russia doesn't fully understand the Trump phenomenon.
Yeah. But I mean, he would have goaded Hillary Clinton into doing this probably on fucking day one, and he would have loved every second of it because he hates her, which is now why we have Donald Trump, by the way. One of the reasons, anyway.
Yeah.
But
but also, Hillary Clinton never met a war she didn't love.
Big time.
So,
yeah.
I mean, we didn't have a lot of...
She was in favor of doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that she was in favor of doing this. She was in favor
of
doing it in Libya. She was the candidate
who was in favor of doing this.
Right.
By the way, Donald Trump was the candidate who was not in favor of military intervention in many countries in the Middle East, including Iran, including Syria.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton has at various times in her career advocated for intervening basically everywhere. She believes in muscular foreign policy. That is part of, you know, I think what that's part of what did her in 2008. People were over it. People were sick of being at war.
It is what did her.
People didn't want to hear excuses about why she thought we should go to Iraq and all this bullshit.
Yeah.
People were just like, stop it, lady. We don't want to do this shit anymore. And the one of the only policy differences between her and Obama at that time was that he said we should try diplomacy in Iran. And she said no.
Yeah.
And she called him naive.
But, yeah.
Which is a moment I remember very clearly because I was like, let me tell you who's naive, lady, to myself. And then I quietly went about my business.
Yeah.
Not that quietly.
Yeah.
But so in any case, if you have theories about what's happening, we're looking for new conspiracies to subscribe to anyway.
Yeah.
But let us know.
Tell us.
Because I, for the life of me, cannot figure out what anyone's game is
like,
in this situation.
If you can make sense of this in a step-by-step process from beginning to end, starting with the sarin gas attack
last
week.
Send us an email right away. It's braintrustapproved @gmail.com, and we would love to know. Here's a little footnote to all of this, which is that if Hillary Clinton or anybody had been looking for a two-for war with Syria and Iran, this could...
And Russia and Iran.
I mean, Russia and Iran.
Yeah.
This could have been our in.
Yeah, because the other big Syria lover is Iran.
That's right.
Like, that's who's
That's who
Syria.
Else is in bed that's, with Assad. Yeah,
exactly.
So, fun times.
Yes,
fun times.
Indeed. Indeed.
Now here's where things get more delicious and less terrifying.
Yeah.
But most
this
not
is good.
This is
almost the whole rest of the podcast is delicious.
It's delicious.
I mean, if you're a conspiracy theory lover, then that's you may have just enjoyed what we just talked about.
but maybe you're not. Maybe you care about facts and truth.
from here on out.
It's all just fun.
Yeah.
It's all goodness. Gossipy fun.
The palace intrigue at the White House
is getting more exciting.
Really
by the moment.
Got going last week.
Oh, my God.
Boy.
So we've been saying for a while that a purge is coming. And that's because nobody survives in Trump's world that long.
No. I mean,
and
we saw this on the campaign.
Right.
I mean, it just
How many campaign managers and,
all of them.
You know, advisors did
Basically
he go
Basically anyone who was willing.
Exactly.
ran that campaign
exactly.
at one point
like,
or another.
There might have been a time where you ran it and didn't realize it.
Right.
Because so many people were in and out.
There were de facto campaign managers. Actually, there's one who had Russia ties, like close Russia ties. I mean, there's multiple,
but one specifically who lost his job over them.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. So we can't be far from this. And last week began early in the week with Steve Bannon being rightfully, finally, thank God, being removed from the National Security Council. It was ridiculous that he was there anyway. But
and there are so many great angles to this because I remember at the time Trump was furious that. You know, this was done early on.
He secretly wrote himself onto the National Security Council.
Exactly, where Bannon did this. And Trump was really angry at him.
He was in one of the secret,
it was
you know,
one of his secret missives.
Written,
yeah, his executive you know, orders that he was writing in a bunker somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But Trump was angry because it made him look bad.
Right.
Bannon didn't seem to realize that there would be blowback because he didn't seem to realize there would be blowback on anything. Because remember, when he was single-handedly writing those executive orders, they were all challenged in court. That was back when our first Muslim ban came into play and everyone was like, no, this is literally not allowed.
You
cannot
be doing
this.
That. Yeah.
In any case, theoretically, according to Trump, Bannon was placed on the National Security Council to keep an eye on Mike Flynn.
What?
You should not hire a national security advisor that you have to keep an eye on.
Oh, God.
He should be the guy keeping an eye on other people.
That's right.
That's what his job is.
Yes.
You don't need to keep an eye on him.
He's running a security council. That's,
right.
You don't
That's the guy. It's his eyes that are the eyes.
His eyes are the eyes. That is right.
Yeah. So in any case, H.R. McMaster apparently is who masterminded this removal of Steve Bannon. Because
yeah.
he was
H.R.
Like,
McMastermind.
Yeah, H.R. McMastermind. Because he was like, fuck this. What is this asshat doing in the Situation Room?
Right?
Nothing.
Get this
fucking idiot out of here.
Goon out of here. God.
And this is part of a larger narrative because Bannon has been seeing a sort of waning of his influence.
Yeah, and this is
he
where
he's been
it's
absent from
juicy.
Meetings. He's, you know, now he's lost his seat at the National Security Council. Every piece of legislation he's been involved in has been a massive failure.
Yeah.
When he finally got involved in the healthcare conversation, it was to tell people they could take it or leave it. And they were like, all right, we'll leave it.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, who cares? Like, what was that strategy?
Yeah, exactly.
And White House leakers, who are the best part of the story, say that Bannon resisted the move, threatened to quit if it went forward at one point, which is funny because his own camp is being like,
he
claims no. He
wants,
you know.
This is all part of the natural
flow. It was a natural evolution. This doesn't change his influence. And, you know, he was only there to keep an eye on Flynn, and now Flynn's not there, so it's no big deal. But this new executive order also put back all of the positions that had been removed in that first executive order written by Bannon.
Yeah.
So he restored the Joint Chiefs chairman and the intelligence director to the NSC, and then also added the energy secretary.
Which is Rick Perry, by the way, which
shouldn't
make
news.
You feel good.
Yeah. The CIA director, Mike Pompeo, also shouldn't make you feel good. And the UN ambassador.
Which is Nikki Haley, who has been one of the reasonable people. She and H.R. McMaster have been the two who have been sort of like speaking the most coherently on this Russia thing. Because going back to that for just 2 seconds, is that Rex Tillerson does, and Sean Spicer, who we shouldn't expect him to know anything about anything, have been on wildly different sides of talking about whether we're going to be the, whether, you know, Rex Tillerson said something the other day, like, anybody in the world who is mistreating their people should be on watch. And seconds later, Sean Spicer is saying, we're not going to be the world's, you know, we're not going to, I mean, they, like, nobody... Very few people know what's going on, and Nikki Haley somehow seems to be able to manage
what's going on.
All of that. And I wouldn't, I mean,
wouldn't have thought it.
So I'm glad she's back on there, but also, like, I can't be having Nikki Haley being like the adult person in the room. Like, it's, that's just not what I'm looking for.
No, that's not.
I mean, I'm glad if she's going to be, I'm glad she's there.
Right,
but
sure.
I mean, still, it's not great. Anyway,
In any case. Trump's original order had also taken the Homeland Security Council out from under the National Security Advisor, and this new order put it back.
Yeah.
So H.R. McMaster seems to be a slightly more coherent person, which is good news because obviously when your first National Security Advisor has to resign in disgrace only a couple months into your tenure, it's not great news.
Well, even Democrats were happy about McMaster because they sort of like he felt like he was a sort of normal person, sort of like a free thinker.
Yeah.
He said the whole time, like when he always said that he would be speaking truth to power, like if he, if he, you know, I mean, he would be willing to tell Trump like no on things or to like, you know, be reasonable.
I know,
with
and it
him,
sounds
so.
Like he is actually doing
it
that
does.
When it comes.
Yeah.
And in the process of all of this, the delicious part is that Steve Bannon's influence as the person who was speaking truth to power is starting to diminish. So, and I think this has been ongoing for a while. I have been saying for a while that I see him as one of the people who's ripe for an ouster because A, he has a history of saying critical things about Trump from before he joined the campaign. He's not critical things like, oh, I don't agree with him on foreign policy. Critical things like he's an idiot and a puppet.
Yeah.
You know, he called him a puppet at one point. The president has been sort of, according to leaks, a little bit upset about the reputation that Bannon developed for being the actual president. You know, when media was sort of promoting this story, this idea that President Bannon was the real, you know, guy behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Donald Trump really didn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
And so I knew his ego at some point was going to get away from him.
But that being said, if the media already thought that and he's being a failure at everything, then he's the perfect scapegoat because do you not
accept that he ultimately carries with him the success and failure of the entire administration because in failing at everything, he's made them all fail at everything.
Well, I know.
Which is why he's going to go.
That's why he's
But the
go.
Larger right. story here is that he's embarrassing all of them.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
That's all that Trump doesn't want to be embarrassed. And
no,
he
and
has a lot to be embarrassed about.
And that is the main thing. Yeah. Because, like, I fully believe that, you know, we're about to talk about some of the, you know, infighting within the White House. And we talked a little bit about it last week. But most people who have worked for Trump and some of his current aides even say that Trump has a long fuse for infighting, for nonsense. Like, he's used to it. It's probably how
it's how he runs his companies.
His
I mean, we said this a long
runs.
Time ago. This is
totally.
How everything in Trump's world happens.
But
everyone fights and he just
gets
to come in and
but
be the boss.
But the one thing is that he doesn't like to be embarrassed. And he also likes to sort of, like, at least give a perception of success. Now, you can sort of debate whether Trump Enterprises or whatever it's called
or the Trump world is
successful or not. Right. He's filed for bankruptcy God knows how many times. But I mean, like, he sort of at least lives in a world where he can sort of, you know, portray
success. He's got
success.
The apprentice.
And he can't portray that currently because there's
nothing
to point to that would, you know, be able,
every single thing has been a failure.
Right, exactly.
That he's tried.
So he also, I think, Bannon, which is another thing, I'm starting to think, you know, I think we all sort of initially thought that he was sort of like the whole mastermind behind this thing. I'm starting to think that he's like an actual idiot.
Well, this is what I have been saying. No one should think, and this is even in this fucking article, everyone is like, it would be a mistake to underestimate him because he's really crafty. And listen, I'm sure he's a sneak monger.
Right.
I'm not
totally. Yeah, he's a snake.
He's a snake.
Yeah.
But
he's been, he's a snake oil salesman. That's what he made his career on.
Exactly.
He runs Breitbart, which is...
He's a snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
Is he a genius?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
And even if he was a genius at being a snake oil salesman, there are limitations that you run into when you're trying to run a government.
A government.
Because the one thing he has no experience doing whatsoever is running a government.
Well, that's
and that
one
is
of the
showing.
That's one of the larger issues that the whole administration is running into.
But right? I mean, like, this is... You can... There are ways to be smart at things without being smart in general.
Right, yes.
I think that he has, like Trump, a sort of savant-like quality that allows him to be really good at this sort of narrow thing.
Yes.
Trump is good at acting so brash and bombastic that you sort of don't challenge him.
Right.
You know, he's a showman, sort of. He loves the attention. He's a narcissist.
Well, and Bannon played to those instincts.
And I think
on some level that helped Trump win. And, you know,
a lot
of people thought that was what was only ultimately going to bring Trump down in the campaign. But ultimately, I think it was what moved him.
I tell the story all the time of the friend that in college once asked me for a ride to the doctor at 6 a.m. And I was so shocked at her gall that I said yes.
Right.
I feel like that's what America said yes to giving a friend a 6 a.m. ride to the doctor.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That's and Bannon helped create that monster.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Right.
But Bannon is not...
That doesn't take a genius.
No, it takes a savant.
Yeah.
It takes him having a specific skill that he has.
Right.
The skill he doesn't have is creating any sort of legislative momentum that works.
Right, exactly.
He can't work with people because he's an asshole and nobody likes him.
Which is what the Kushners of the administration have not been so keen on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, in any case, this brings us to our next story.
Yes.
Bannon's influence is waning. He's off the NSC.
Yes.
And now
reports
are coming out
later in the week.
Yeah.
After we find out about the NSC story, that there's about to be a White House shakeup.
Yeah.
Which we have been telling you basically
since
day two.
Right.
Was going to be happening.
Yeah. And though it feels like it's been a long time, this is actually very fast to have a White House shakeup. It's only because we warn you every week that it's coming that it feels slow.
Yeah. And we know it's felt like an entire term already.
Right.
But it's March. Guys,
right.
It's April.
Yeah. It's God.
Yikes.
It's felt long and slow.
Yeah.
It's felt short and slow.
Yeah. So the two people who have been rumored to be getting fired are Steve Bannon, which makes sense, and Reince Priebus. And
which we've been telling you is going to happen
this
whole time.
As I was telling you before the podcast. Classic Brent. I feel a little bad for Reince Priebus because he's the chief of staff and he has obviously been charged with sort of making this whole thing work. And it's unworkable right now. I mean, he could be like literally the greatest political mind in all of government world history, and he would not be able to make Jared Kushner and Steve Bannon get along. That's just not a possible thing. He's not a magician.
And he's also not going to be able to make the House and Senate function.
No.
Which is his other job.
Right.
Is to work with the House and Senate to get stuff done.
No.
That's not possible because they're not functioning without him.
Can't do it.
Here's the thing I'll say about him.
Yeah.
This man knew he was taking an unworkable job.
Well, he totally did.
He did it to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you could see remember when Chris Christie endorsed Trump with that weird like Stockholm syndrome look in his eyes as
he terrified.
Yeah. Reince Priebus had the same look at the sort of at the victory party the night of election night.
Man. Now we have to do this.
Donald Trump mispronounced his name, then gave him the most awkward handshake, and he looked straight into the camera as if he had been kidnapped.
Help me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've seen it from Melania many times. A lot of people in the Trump orbit.
Right. Yes.
That blank, scared stare.
Yeah.
He had it. He knew what he was getting into.
Yeah.
And so I don't feel bad for him because I feel like he helped
create
the monster.
Yeah.
And he wants out. Of course he wants out.
He's going to be a happier person.
Lunatic wants in this administration.
Nobody. Yeah.
In any case, here are some thoughts about who's going to take his place. Because The fun of speculating who's next is already starting.
There's some interesting people on this list, and the person who sort of was getting the most play, at least from what I was reading and hearing, is the most fascinating and also takes me to other sort of
new conspiracies heights. Yeah.
New conspiracy heights. Yeah, exactly. So there's House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, which makes sort of perfect sense because he would obviously be able to sort of like, in theory, help them get things done. But as we're going to tell you in a few minutes, the House...
is broken.
Can't do anything. It's totally broken. Yeah, we'll get there in a second. Then Wayne Berman of the Blackstone Group, which just doesn't
sound suspect.
Sounds totally suspect.
That's because it sounds like Blackwater.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. He's some sort of like Washington heavy hitter. He's worked on a bunch of presidential campaigns. He was a commerce secretary under George H.W. Bush.
He was the assistant secretary of commerce.
Excuse me.
Let's not be crazy.
Yikes. Let's not inflate his resume.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. David Urban, who is like of the Washington advisory firm, the American Continental Group.
He was Arlen Specter's chief of staff before Arlen Specter died.
Right. He was from, and Arlen Specter was a senator from Pennsylvania, and he helped Trump in Pennsylvania, and Trump won Pennsylvania. So apparently he was sort of like, you know, given a lot of credit for helping that win come to be. So, and he was also apparently like in contact with Trump a bunch, like throughout the campaign. And then lastly is the person who I was hearing was going to be the guy, and it's Gary Cohn, who's Trump's economic advisor. He's the former number two at Goldman Sachs, and he and Jared Kushner, also there are reports that it's Kushner who has been pushing for this shakeup. Right. This shakeup.
Shocking.
Shocking. Yeah, exactly. He and Kushner have been starting to, I mean, Kushner has always had pull, which is the other thing that makes me think that Bannon is a fucking moron, because he decided to pick a fight with Jared Kushner, who is his wife now has an office at the White House, and he is like the only person who lasted through the entire Trump campaign. I mean, he went through 700 campaign managers. He was basically thought to be the, after Corey Lewandowski left, before they hired anybody, thought to sort of be the campaign manager at the time. He is like the guy, he's not going anywhere. No. Jared Kushner is not going anywhere. So if you're, big master plan is to pick a big fight with Jared Kushner, then like that's,
it turns out you're not as smart as everyone's telling you.
That's the plan of an idiot.
That's the plan of an idiot.
So anyway, but Cohn and Kushner are two of the people in the White House who Steve Bannon has dubbed the Democrats, which is not clever because they actually are.
Right. They both of them are former Democrats.
Both. Yes.
Lifelong Democrats.
And up until literally Kushner was a Democrat until he started working on the Trump campaign, and
much Cohn, like his wife,
and Cohn was a Democrat until Dodd-Frank passed. So he's a finance guy. So he's the wrong kind of Democrat. He's just the kind of rich Democrat who was worried about their own money. So he got mad at Dodd-Frank.
Right.
But I mean, it's interesting that those two are sort of starting to get more pull in the White House. I mean, Trump was a former Democrat, lest we forget. I mean,
there are no rules with any of these people. There are no rules.
I don't actually think that, like, they're not going to become Democrats. I was going to say, we're not all of a sudden going to have, like, a Democratic administration.
But
like,
it does seem like, you know, the times that Trump has been reined in on his worst impulses, it has been Kushner that has done it. Things like trying to, like, pass, you know, weird anti-gay legislation that, you know, they've been able to slowly rein him in from making statements.
Not enough.
But I mean, like, I think that the more people in his orbit that can at least rein him in from his worst impulses, you know, in the broad sense, is at least an improvement over Steve Bannon being there.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Rince Priebus himself has no moral compass. So he is not someone who can rein anyone into anything.
No.
Rince Priebus decided, hell, we'll get Donald Trump elected.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's a decision Rince Priebus made.
Yeah.
So he gets what he gets.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I don't think Trump doesn't understand what it is to be ideologically aligned with him because he has no ideological center.
No,
so
exactly.
So picking people that he wants to be around is just about picking business friends that he feels comfortable with because he knows they all love business together.
Yeah, and that's Gary.
And they're rich people together. It's not about any ideology.
No. Yeah.
And he'll just blow wherever the wind blows him.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
These people will blow too because they don't give a shit.
Right.
Like, think of all the things that Kushner has put up with Trump saying and not left his campaign.
Right, exactly.
Kushner has no moral compass.
Right.
His sort of own, you know, ideology might be slightly to the left of Donald Trump's, but he doesn't have a moral compass about it.
No.
He's willing to work towards any horrible goal.
Totally.
You know? And this probably, you know, that's the same with Gary Cohn.
Yeah. But he's been dubbed globalist Gary by the Hill Republicans, by
which
the House Republicans.
Which is interesting.
Right, because that's, and that's the thing that is the
it's
reason
also
that.
Stupid
that's
Trump.
The, that's the reason that Bannon and Kushner will never get along.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that I think that probably they're both assholes. I mean, I think Steve Bannon is probably
a
bigger asshole.
I would also contend that maybe your Jewish son-in-law and a white nationalist don't have anywhere to find common ground.
That's the thing. I mean, it's not just
Bannon already thinks that Jared Kushner shouldn't exist.
It's not it's not just their personalities, and it's not just even their politics, but it's actually like who both of them sort of like. I mean, you said that they don't have a moral compass. If they were to explain their moral compass to someone as if they had one, they would be so diametrically opposite that there would be. I'm surprised that they actually have. You know, Steve Bannon made some quote about like how he loves a knife fight. in regards to like whether he was going to quit or not.
Right.
I'm surprised they haven't had a literal one already.
Knife fight.
Because well, like
Kushner would not win that fight.
No, he wouldn't.
He's smart to not get in a fight.
But
with
that's Kushner. How like you know when you really think about who those two people are, there's no world in which they can exist together. There just isn't. I'm surprised that it hasn't happened already.
No, it's there's no room for their ideologies to exist in
together.
The same space.
No,
there's just, and even if they were both delightful people,
certainly not.
There's no compromising.
Certainly not in a world where they're
white
supposed
nationalist.
To be running government. For
no,
God's
exactly.
Sake.
I mean. But there is the issue here is that Steve Bannon does have a moral compass. He has a very strong moral compass.
Yes.
His morality is fucked.
Just big
but
time.
Unlike Kushner and Trump and all these business guys who just want to make money, Steve Bannon believes very strongly in a set of principles that are patently evil.
Yes.
And he is not willing to compromise on them. That's why when he wants healthcare reform, he tells them, you vote with this and you like it. And you know, doesn't understand that that's not really how change gets made in government.
Yeah.
That's not really how things work. Yeah. And so to some degree, regardless of who's around him, Steve Bannon can't exist in a space where everyone doesn't have the same ideology as him because he doesn't compromise.
No.
And Trump, for all his big talk, only compromises. Trump is a terrible negotiator. He's a terrible deal maker.
Yeah.
He basically makes your deal and then tells everyone that he thought of it after he said the exact opposite going into the deal. You know, like, I mean, Donald Trump doesn't have any sort of principle to draw upon.
Yeah.
And Steve Bannon only has principles to draw upon. He has no practical sense of what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And so for somebody like Steve Bannon to exist in the White House at all is difficult at best.
Yeah.
It can only happen for short periods of time.
Yeah.
And if there is someone like Kushner in that space, there's no way for both of them to survive.
It wouldn't surprise me that, first off, I think this is, they've supposedly buried the hatchet, but I don't buy it for a second.
Well,
that's what you say. But not only do I think
that. If someone asked me if me and Julia Brownlee had buried the hatchet because we were about to have dinner together, I might say yes, just to not have an awkward dinner with Julia Brownlee, but am I still furious with her? Of course.
Yeah, she's awful. But not only do I think that, like, he's certainly on his way out, it would not shock me at all if he totally turned on these guys.
Oh. That's 100% what he's going to do.
And that will be
Breitbart
as
already
well.
Turned on their healthcare legislation.
Totally.
I mean, Steve Bannon is not afraid to turn on a bitch.
Yeah. That is right. God. Steve Bannon is not afraid to turn on a bitch. Yes.
Yeah. It's.
Anyway.
It's going to be fascinating to watch this all go down.
Can't wait.
I'm so excited about all of it.
Can't wait.
I want us at every turn to find reason to challenge the notion that any of these people are genius masterminds of anything.
They're not.
Here are some facts to help you not think that. Jared Kushner is the same age as Brent. He has roughly as much job experience as Brent.
Right.
He's just a guy in his 30s.
Who happens to be
married.
Son-in-law. And the son of a very rich person.
Yes. Happens to be both incredibly blessed himself.
Yes.
And also married to a person who's just incredibly lucky as well.
Yes.
But at his base, he is just a guy like any
30-something with no government experience who's now running
the free
Earth.
World. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Steve Bannon is a person who literally wrote fake news for a living.
Right.
Up until this point. Who just like happens to know rich people because rich people bankroll Breitbart.
Yep.
Who is a literal white nationalist. And as much as this election might give you pause, that is not where this country is.
No.
A majority of people in this country are not white nationalists.
No.
I know that a majority of people in this country, you know, are complicit in a racist system.
Yes.
I'm not suggesting that's not the case.
No.
But what I am suggesting is that given the chance to vote on whether or not we should have a nation that discriminates against everyone that's not white,
right.
Most people in this nation would not vote
for
that America.
Pass.
That would not pass in a majority vote.
No.
This is a sort of contrivance of a ridiculous electoral system that weights voters who don't have any contact with reality over voters that have contact with everyone. That's unfortunate. But don't let anyone make you believe that genius is involved here.
No.
This is not genius. No. And that's why I'm also leaning towards the haphazard airstrike version of the Syria story. Right, and every exactly. other story, I feel like every time something seems to not make sense, the answer is that it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a bunch
sense.
Of Mr. Magoos walking around the White
exactly.
House right now.
Yeah. Like, of course nothing makes sense.
No.
In any case, speaking of Mr. Magoos walking around the government.
Places. Right, they're also walking
they're
around
also
the house.
They're also walking around the house.
Right now.
Because, yeah. oh my God, these Republican idiots are like the worst at their
they
jobs.
They tried a round two at this healthcare
bill.
And it
give
went,
it up.
It went more disastrously than the first one did. Like, in a way that, like, was actually maybe further embarrassing, although it probably it got less media play, so I think it was
maybe
less
it was, I had a moment where this started going on, and I thought, oh, fuck. They're going to do this
that's
without us.
That's what I
us.
Thought, too.
I'm I, was so, like, I was so nervous.
Was they failed at it, and it was like...
It was a big thing, and now they're going to sneak
away. And now they're going to... Right, exactly. And nobody's going to know it, and then all of a sudden, there's going to be 10 million people off their healthcare, and everybody's going to be like, wait a minute, I thought this fucking thing failed. That's
thankfully, the Tuesday group got involved.
The Tuesday group and the Freedom Caucus is still always involved.
Right,
but, yeah. I never knew as much about the Tuesday group as I learned this
last
I
assume they're named after the day Tuesday, which is probably when they first met.
Probably when they... Yes, that's probably
it was probably this Tuesday.
They need a better fucking name. The Tuesday group should
I think they should
brainstorm.
No, I want to call them the Tuesday group forever.
Well, I
like nothing more than silly government names.
I know.
Like the Gang of Eight, the Gang of 12. I once wrote a list of how many gangs there were.
Oh, yeah.
And it was every number leading up to, like,
also,
14.
Remember when we talked... Maybe we didn't talk about it on this podcast. I don't remember, but all the caucuses there are.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Cut Flower
the
Caucus.
The Cut Flower Caucus, the Wine Caucus. Two very bipartisan caucuses.
Yeah.
Because everyone loves
Everybody
wine and cut flowers.
Wine and flowers. Exactly, yeah. But anyway, the Tuesday group is the moderate group in the House, and the House Freedom Caucus, as we know, is the crazies.
I bet that this is new, and they thought to themselves, if the Freedom Caucus can have a group, we can have a group. And then on Tuesday, they met, and they were like, there,
let's
the
fix
Tuesday
healthcare.
Group.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It did not go so well.
There's one thing that the House Freedom Caucus and the Tuesday group cannot do.
Right.
It is get along and pass a healthcare
the
bill.
The only thing that came from this attempt was more intense finger pointing than the last time.
It was a sort of epic
because the
showdown of finger pointing.
Yeah, because as we know, Trump decided to blame, I think probably rightly, the Freedom Caucus after the first failure. So
well, first
now,
he tried to blame the Democrats.
Right,
that was an interesting choice since they were never asked to vote for the bill
in
the first place.
But now the Freedom Caucus has got their chance to point some fingers at the Tuesday group, and now that they have a group that's has a name, it's easy for them
to
do so.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, they met... And what it sounded like they, basically what they, the demand that they wanted, the Freedom Caucus, this is. Because the Tuesday group, I think, went in there and was like, well, we're reasonable people. We're going to fix this with them.
Exactly.
We know these guys. Like, we're just going to, we're going to fix
it. Us Tuesday
guys
get it.
Yeah.
We're good people.
But then they found out what
the
Freedom
Caucus
wanted.
To do something that will fuck over every member of the House.
Right. We're going to
remove the community rating, which basically that's the thing that means that everyone is charged the same for the same coverage.
Coverage.
So it used to be that sick people could be charged more for the same coverage as poor, charged more than healthy people because sick people cost more to insure.
So basically what they want to do is remove the cost protections.
Yeah. For people with pre-existing conditions.
For people with pre-existing conditions.
A tremendously popular part of the Affordable Care Act.
So what they are asking the House Republicans to do is to pass a bill to rip everyone off of who or to again make it, you know, people with pre-existing conditions to not be able to get health care, which is literally a recipe for having like 500 Democratic members in the House.
Yes. Right.
I mean, it's
literally.
Like that's like is basically like you have requested your own party to pass a bill that will allow for a Democratic supermajority.
Right.
Like
the superest
and
of
so,
supermajority.
And the Tuesday group literally left this like 2-hour meeting that they had with the Freedom Caucus and they were like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Who are these fucking guys?
This is fucking nuts.
These guys are actually bonkers.
Yeah, they're literal bonkers people. Which is interesting, I want to point out, and Bren has also pointed out, that these are the same fools that passed a repeal of Obamacare like 1,000 times.
Well, and that
would have done the same thing.
Right, and that was, I am not going to agree with the Freedom Caucus very many times, probably on anything. But what the Freedom Caucus is saying right now.
Yeah, is you guys
is
have
that,
been voting for this for fucking years.
Is that all of the people in the Tuesday group voted 7,000 bazillion times to repeal Obamacare while Obama was the president. So why won't you just vote for the same fucking thing now? And while I clearly disagree with them on policy here. Like,
they're not wrong.
They're not wrong.
Why did they think it was okay to repeal Obamacare so many times if they didn't think it was okay to get rid of the Obamacare laws that were protecting their constituents?
So now the Tuesday group is out, or no, now the House Freedom Caucus is being like, the Tuesday group actually just doesn't want to repeal Obamacare. And they might sort of be right.
If the Tuesday group are going to live up to their illustrious name, they should not want to repeal Obamacare.
No.
This should be the end of the line for that discussion.
Yeah.
Because I think if the Tuesday group has realized anything, other than that it's so fun to say the Tuesday group, and they should keep being a group just so that we can do that, it is that there is no incentive to repeal these laws.
Yeah.
Because even starting the conversation leaves them in a precarious position.
Well, I fear that let's keep saying the Tuesday group. I fear that the Tuesday group, which I had never heard of, may have stepped in it here.
Yeah.
Because I think a surefire way to get yourself, at least in the GOP world, out of a job is to get in the crosshairs of these fuckers.
Tea party challenge your hands.
Yes. And so I think that if you are a member of the Tuesday group, and you have to go back to your constituents and say, well, we couldn't repeal Obamacare, and all of the, you know, GOP outside groups who are now getting in on the game here and trashing the Tuesday group are out there spending money against you, you may have made the wrong choice to try.
Here's what I'm going to say. The one thing that the Tuesday group, still named the Tuesday group, has going for them is that when asked why they're in the crosshairs of the Tea Party, they're going to say to each one of their constituents, they wanted to take away your pre-existing condition coverage. Yes. Not that they wanted to keep the ACA or Obamacare. Right. They wanted to take away your pre-existing condition coverage.
Yeah.
I said no.
Right.
And if their constituents aren't full fools, which maybe some of them are. Then either that district is going
enough
to a Democrat.
Enough of them probably have pre-existing conditions themselves.
Yeah.
Everyone does,
everyone in the living is a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, you might recall that babies were getting kicked off health coverage for being too fat to, you know, and that being called a pre-existing condition because they weighed 10 pounds at birth.
Yeah.
Like, these are things that were really happening in the old days. I feel like welcome those Tea Party challengers. And if you can't get elected, then let a Democrat win that district.
Yeah.
Because that is the most sort of like delicious pat argument against repealing the Affordable Care Act that you could possibly have. It's so specific. It affects every single one of us. It's so easy to explain.
Yeah.
And if the Freedom Caucus wants to go after them over that, I would love to see that conversation happen.
But the Freedom Caucus they're terrible.
They're bad
people.
Don't
get me wrong. Another thing that I will say for the Freedom Caucus is that they definitely do have principles.
They are the Steve Bannons of the House.
They are the Steve Bannons of the House.
They have a moral compass. It's the wrong one, but they have it.
Right,
they
exactly.
They don't compromise.
Because they will not. You know, the White House sent Mike Pence to go deal with them because Mike Pence is at least a similar ish brand of crazy.
Yeah.
Probably not quite as much, but he was also in the House himself, so he knows some of these guys. So they sent him to go deal with these people, and somebody who spoke on, I think, anonymity claimed that sending Mike Pence to deal with them literally solidified their no vote on this bill. I mean, like, these guys just...
They don't fuck around.
They said no, and they don't want to hear your damn compromises because it's repeal Obamacare or bust for these guys.
Yeah.
So, like, don't come at them with
They want no regulations.
Come at them with a stupid name for a group. Like,
no.
Just don't come for them. They're like the Maxine Waters of the GOP. Like,
except,
don't come for them.
Except that they are also, like, unthinking.
Well, right. They're
fools.
They're idiots.
They're not clever.
No.
They're not the Maxine Waters
of... Well, no,
they're not. They're the, like, the Dennis Kuciniches of,
sure,
you know?
Well, but I love him too, though.
I know. Well, I'm saying that he'll be the one no vote on your war resolution.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
He
yes.
would do that for
right,
you.
He'll vote against the
He would
Patriot
vote against
Act.
The
he'll
Patriot
vote,
Act.
Right, exactly, sure.
That's the guy that they are, except there's a whole group of them, and they can't be reasonable even when they have the ability to be reasonable.
Yeah.
Because once you have 40 of you, you have to start compromising.
You have to.
One guy can make a political vote. 40 of you have to start playing ball. Here's another delicious detail of this story, which is that the Heritage Foundation CEO had the gall to say the intransigence of the Tuesday group was the cause of this falling apart.
Right.
Obamacare was the Heritage Foundation's own plan in the 80s. Come on.
Me hitting the table and on purpose.
For God's sakes. The Heritage Foundation has forgotten about their own history, so we're here to remind them that in like 1980, they released the plan that would become the model for Obamacare.
It makes gobs of money for insurance companies, and it just forces people to buy something. So it's like you're still fucking over consumers, which is also a thing that they love.
Yeah, it's everything that they love in one neat plan.
Yeah.
Does the current plan that we have a public option? Does it have any sort of real cost protection measures for most people? Not really. It has everything that they said. We have a plan. We should have a plan where everyone has to buy private insurance and we'll provide subsidies to poor people. That was their plan. And that's what we have. So it's real rich of them to pretend like that wasn't their idea in the first place.
Oh boy. Yes.
You guys. Devin Nunes.
Nunes.
Has finally recused himself.
He's out.
He's out. Finally, the calls to recuse himself in an investigation in which he started to be a subject of investigation were enough.
And the reason that he is recusing himself is the most amazing reason ever. Because the reason is not because he just like up and decided himself. It's because I can't even tell you how amazing and ironic this is. It's that he is being investigated now by the House Ethics Committee for leaking classified information in that stupid, ridiculous press conference he had. And the reason that that is insanely amazing is because the only hearings that they have had on this thing, which have been shams and sideshows anyway, have been Republicans obsessing not over Trump's ties to Russia.
No, about who's leaking information about Trump's ties to Russia.
They've been obsessing over who's been leaking it and the press's the media deciding to print it.
Yes.
So, like, the fact that that is now what he is being investigated himself for by the Ethics Committee is just too good. It's
symmetry,
Brent.
It's a perfect storytelling device.
It is, yes. And speaking
it's
of symmetry.
It's going to make a great movie.
Speaking of symmetry, the House Ethics Committee is 10 members and is symmetrical in that it has 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans. Nunes has claimed that It's a witch hunt that's out to get him. And the House Ethics Committee is just some sort of, you know, like 10 liberal wingnuts who are like out to get him, which is obviously not the case. So if the House Ethics Committee has decided to investigate him for leaking classified information, it's because
he's done it.
It's because more than the Democrats have decided that it's worth looking at.
Yeah, that's a true statement.
Anyway, so it's good that he's gone because we can... Or is it? I guess our next story is whether it is or not. Yeah. The Democrats were happy because obviously it's sort of just like generally a win for them. Because like obviously they wanted him gone because like he's a fucking asshat and he has more ties to... I mean, he was on the Trump transition team. He worked for the Trump administration. Yeah, so like he's not the perfect person
to be... He should have recused himself anyway.
Immediately. He should have never been
running
the thing to start
with. Was a compromised
person
to be running it.
Yeah.
But the people that are going to replace him are much better. We have Mike Conway. Yeah. And Trey Gowdy.
Oh, God. We know Trey Gowdy.
We know Trey Gowdy.
Yeah.
Tom Rooney.
Yeah.
Those three will take over the inquiry. All of them have already expressed doubts that that Trump and Russia have any ties, despite the fact that we haven't investigated it yet, and there's tons of facts pointing to the fact that they do. Conway notably had a hilarious exchange with James Comey.
Because it's
at a hearing a few weeks ago, where he was basically pressing Comey on why he thought Putin wanted Trump to win, and was using like weird circular logic that we're gonna read to you now. Do you want to read the part of Conway or Comey?
I'll be.
Think about this hard. This is an important decision.
This is tough. I'll be Comey.
Okay.
Because that means I'll get to do the sports metaphor.
That's true. I don't want to do the sports metaphor. I'm Conway. Here we go. The logic is because he really didn't like candidate Clinton that he automatically liked Trump. That assessment is based on what?
Well, it's based on more than that, but part of it is the logic. So I'll use a sports metaphor. Whoever the Red Raiders are playing, you want the Red Raiders to win. So by definition, you want their opponents to lose.
I know, but this says that you want her to lose and him to win.
Well, they're inseparable. It's a two-person event. When you decide... Putin wanted him to... I read the wrong part.
He read my line.
Yeah, I did.
I say, when did you decide Vladimir Putin wanted him to win?
Logically, when he wanted her to lose.
So basically, they got into a tug of war about whether or not Vladimir Putin wanting Hillary Clinton to lose meant that he wanted Donald Trump to win in a two-person contest.
Right, which caused the House, by the way, to burst into laughter at this entire exchange. So, yeah, he's not a real genius, by the way.
Not a genius.
Yeah.
He also
not
doesn't
a logic haver.
Yeah, deal much in logic. He compared Russia meddling in our election to Democrats bringing a famous Mexican singer to provide entertainment at a post-debate celebration in Nevada.
Yeah.
He said, literally, he said this, there are foreign actors, foreign people influencing the vote in Nevada. You don't hear the Democrats screaming and saying one word about that. He was asked whether that was truly on par with Putin's influence. And he said, sure it is. It's foreign influence. If we're worried about foreign influence, let's have the whole story. The story of a Mexican singer singing to crowds at a post-election, by the way, a post-debate celebration.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In any case. Gowdy, you might remember from the Benghazi hearings. He's that guy with that horrible face.
He loves a good hearing.
He loves a good hearing.
But he
has spent years...
Yeah, wasting millions of taxpayer dollars trying to get to the bottom of what happened in Benghazi, which we know what happened and was nothing.
Not that interesting.
I mean, it was terrible, but it wasn't... Yeah, it wasn't interesting in the way that Trey Gowdy wanted you to think it was interesting. And spent millions of dollars trying to get you to think it was interesting.
Exactly.
He also spent almost all of his time on the hearings that they have had on this committee talking about... He is the main person behind talking about the leakers.
Yeah,
Leakergate. He really wants to know...
Get to the bottom of who's leaking this information.
He might start an investigation because he loves an investigation, but it's not going to be the investigation that you want to have.
Yeah. And then we have Rooney, who did withdraw his support from Trump after that whole pussy grabbing quote.
Sure.
But apparently he knows the outcome of this investigation before we've even done it.
Yeah.
Said, we have zero evidence that the Russian government and Trump campaign coordinated in any way.
Mm.
That's what he told his constituents at a town hall meeting last
month. All evidence points to that we do have
also,
that evidence.
Also, we don't have evidence because we haven't investigated
it. Well, that's the other thing.
You can't have evidence that you don't have yet. You can't know what you don't know.
There's
so many issues.
You know what you don't know. Yeah.
So
if you didn't see a bunch of tweets from a bunch of Republicans talking about how great and wonderful this month's jobs reports were, now that they're decided that they like the jobs report.
Right, yeah. Remember
after
that?
The good February one. It's because...
They're finally telling the truth.
Right. It's because last month was garbage.
Yeah. It was a garbage jobs report. February's numbers got revised down.
Like we told you that they probably would.
There's no world in which the jobs numbers are the jobs numbers.
Yeah.
That's just fact.
Yeah. So the unemployment rate did go down because we did add jobs. But we only added 98,000 jobs. And the median forecast in the, you know, the Bloomberg survey of economists is like... Where they sort of like pre-estimate how many jobs they think are
going to happen.
They forecast, right. They had estimated 180,000 and we added 98,000. So we added basically half of what they were going to add. So there was sort of like some potential good news in there in that the unemployment rate did go down to 4.5%. Like you can sort of like point to maybe us getting closer to full-ish employment anyway.
Right.
But that would clearly have nothing to do with Trump, obviously. That would have to do with like the last 7 years of job growth, which...
We're still in the Obama fiscal year, you guys.
We'll get to the point where he'll take credit for that, obviously. Right. But
we won't have job growth at that time to take credit for it. That's a forecast from Lila Nordstrom, TM.
Yeah. there you go. Anyway.
This was the slowest month since May of last year. So, awesome. And now...
There you go.
Here's an entire section on Bernie Sanders.
Like multiple stories.
Bernie Sanders is killing it right
now. Right, and we didn't... These aren't just, like, stories that we dug to find.
No, these are big stories.
Yeah.
First of all, he's going on a national tour because he's basically, like, a rock star at this point.
He is.
Because... And this is actually... So, Tom Perez seems to have heard some ire.
So many things are great about this tour.
Yeah.
Like,
Tom Perez is involved.
Right. He's going with him.
He's going with him?
Yeah.
Exactly. And that means that he has a sense that the DNC really does have to reinvigorate their grassroots energy.
Grassroots and the 50-state strategy.
And the 50-state strategy.
Because this tour is going to places...
That are traditional Republican districts.
That Democrats have forgot.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is a great win for Democrats. It's also, I think, a smart strategy for the far left to sort of start reaching out to some of these states where they have more in common with
100%.
The needs of the voters than, you know, like remember that Bernie Sanders town hall in West Virginia?
Exactly.
What we discovered is that a lot of voters there were actually looking for a platform kind of like Bernie's.
Yeah. Well, and that's what he said in regards to this. This is a sort of long quote, but I feel like it's appropriate to read the whole
thing.
He said, the idea that we have a major political party today, which has essentially given up on half the country, is beyond absurd. It is pathetic because many of those states are some of the states in the most economic distress. People who are living in impoverished states states, whether it's Mississippi or Alabama or South Carolina, states all over this country, West Virginia, states that are really hurting should not be voting for right-wing Republicans to lead them, who are much more concerned about the interests of the wealthy and the powerful than ordinary people in their states. And he has never been more right about anything.
It's true.
Well, he has been more. Right. He's been as right about anything because he's been right about everything.
Right. He's been equally right about other things. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
But this is one of his rightest statements.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where they're going to go.
Yeah.
It hasn't fully been planned yet, although they have said that I think they're going to Omaha because there's like a mayor's race there. Yeah. And that's, you know, Nebraska is certainly a place where.
And also, Montana has a populist running for the House election.
Yes.
A populist Democrat.
Yeah.
Who's also a famous folk singer.
Folk singer. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's fun. Yeah. But basically, this is also going to give them the flexibility to go visit places that start having interesting races as they happen.
Because, and to get their message out there to these voters. Yeah, who, so like, that don't
they, some of these
this.
Places can
they
have
certainly
races.
They didn't hear it in the... I was going to say they didn't hear it in the general. They sort of quasi heard it in the general, but from Trump, and it was coded in different ways, certainly. But they certainly didn't hear it from the Democrats in the general election.
No. And I think this is also maybe going to give us an opportunity. I think one of the things that we don't do as Democrats, and I was reading something about this recently, is it's almost like we are, instead of offering a platform, we're like apologizing for our platform a lot of the time. So instead of going to places and saying we have policies that could help you,
we
sort of are like, we're going to, we want to reform healthcare, but don't worry, we're not going to reform it too much. Or we want to reform college tuition, but don't worry, we're not going to reform it too much. Like everything we do, instead of being an offensive strategy is us sort of like apologetically saying, don't worry, we're not going to change things too much.
Yeah.
And I think that even in a year where you're running off of a Democratic presidency, you sort of want to hear what your ideas are, not really how you're going to do it. Nobody cares how you're going to do it because that's boring.
Right.
But I think that one of the things this gives, you know, the Sanders Democrats an opportunity to do is to go to some of these places and say, instead of saying, don't worry, we're not going to change Obamacare too much, to go and say, we have plans for Obamacare that are even better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think, that just that change in messaging, I think, will have an enormous impact on how people perceive Democrats, because us wandering around being too afraid to actually state our position, so instead we talk in circles for 20 minutes, doesn't do anyone any favors, 100%. You know?
Yep.
In any case, there's a Georgia race to replace Tom Price where that guy Ossoff or whatever his name is, who's like 30 years old, is like killing it in early voting. And Republicans are now throwing money at it because they're panicking. Right. So that's an exciting race that they might be able to make some visits in. There's a race to replace Mike Pompeo in Kansas that is supposed to be in the bag for Republicans, but the Democrat is running pretty close there now.
Right, that's tomorrow, actually.
And that's tomorrow. They're not going to make that there. But races like this are starting to pop up everywhere. We're hearing about these like once a week.
Yeah, we've talked about them a lot on the podcast.
So plenty of opportunities for this tour.
They could go nearly anywhere.
Exactly. I mean. Plenty of chances for this tour. And we had a race in LA where no one showed up recently, I think in the 24th district. So, you know, was that Becerra's district? Who was that?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was Becerra's district.
Exactly. And so the progressives didn't do so great.
The progressives didn't so great. Nobody fucking showed up because no one had heard about it.
Right. There was a story in the LA Times about like how what happened to progressivism on the east side, honestly, in a progressive area of what should
here's
LA
what kids. Happened.
Right.
I didn't hear about that district,
no
that race until
on.
The day before.
I
don't know anyone who knew about it except for a few angry friends on Facebook who were mad no one showed up. And I was like, you have to give people a chance to know.
Yeah.
You have to tell them to do it first. Yeah. They can't be looking every day for just in case they have to vote tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, doesn't make any sense. In any case, here's some other exciting Bernie news.
Yeah. Because this is exciting Bernie news. And at least as far as I'm concerned, it's exciting in some way or another gossip news about Andrew Cuomo. But I'll let you.
Back in January,
you deliver the news.
Andrew Cuomo announced that they were going to plan to make state, city, and community colleges in New York State tuition free for students who make students whose families make up to $125,000 a year. Bernie Sanders was with him.
Yes.
We brought you that news at the time.
Yeah, and not only was Bernie Sanders with him, an important note to make is that I think that Andrew Cuomo sort of like gets sort of like political pageantry, I think, sort of.
He, sure does.
Bernie Sanders was at him at that event. It looked like a campaign event.
Yes.
And he also let Bernie Sanders speak last.
Yeah.
And that was obviously Cuomo's event. I mean, like, but he was sort of like,
he's from a famous New York political dynasty.
I know he is. Of course.
He gets it.
I know. Yes.
On Sunday night, the state legislature passed the state budget that included that proposal.
Yes.
So now this plan, which is called the Excelsior Scholarship, which is a ridiculous name for it, but I'm going with it, which is going to be phased in over the next 3 years, is going to, by 2019, make state colleges and city colleges free for people that whose families make up to $125,000 a year.
Yep.
New York State. Very New York State. New York State that has a Republican-controlled Senate. Here's another tidbit about New York State.
Yeah.
New York State Senate is one vote away from passing single-payer health care.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Things are getting exciting in New York State in a way that is almost shocking. Because if New York State with a Republican Senate can outpace California the way that they're doing right now, the sky's the limit.
Right?
But in any case,
this
has led to some speculation about Andrew Cuomo's designs. Because
also in this budget is a $35 million tax break to workers who pay union dues.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a $10 million immigrant legal defense fund. It renewed the millionaire tax that New York had. I mean, like, he made sure that this had, like, the progressive things in it.
And
like,
this is from a man who is not that progressive.
Right, exactly.
Andrew Cuomo is of the straight Clinton brand of politics.
Right.
But he is a very moderate Democrat.
But, yes, he is. But I think he also...
But he sees where the wind's blowing.
And that is where I think...
He's not
that,
a fool.
That's where
Remember
I think he's
when he
different.
Placed a moratorium on fracking?
Right. That's where I think he's different than her.
Yeah.
Is that he can sort of... I think he just... I don't know. I think he gets it a little bit better than she does. He's similar to her in that I don't think that he's like a spectacular like politician, at least in terms of like going out and I don't think he's going to be great at like getting people excited to vote for him necessarily.
Well, and also if the New York State gubernatorial debates are any sign, he will sound like a straight Republican in every debate that he's placed in.
Sure. He's not like a great like retail politician.
No.
I don't see him as that anyway. You would know better. But I mean like he just doesn't strike me as that type of person who would be that. But
he does have first of all, he has the ability to put some real legislation behind him, which Clinton did not have because she was not in office when these changes started to happen. So Andrew Cuomo is able to see the winds blowing in the direction that they're blowing. He's able to see where this leaves an opening for someone like him. He's a political chameleon. He has no principles.
Sure.
And so he is someone who's going to be able, if he does decide to run for higher office, to be able to say, I did these things.
I did all of these things. I signed the gay marriage bill.
Right, he's always been good at finding a piece of legislation that's flashy, that will get him good press, that makes everyone forget that he's kind of an asshat.
He's got this
that gay marriage bill came in the same year that he did a whole bunch of crazy nonsense. But everyone was like, Andrew Cuomo's so progressive because he passed gay marriage.
He's got this think big plan or big thinking or whatever it is where they're like, he's got a lot of infrastructure things going on. They're like redoing the Tappan Zee Bridge and they're like redoing, aren't they spending like $20 million on an airport to redo or something like that? Like
LaGuardia.
He's got a bunch of like infrastructure things like going on that are going to sort of be sort of like things to point to. And I also just think like he sort of is an interesting prospect as like another New Yorker, and no, I'm not counting Hillary Clinton as another New Yorker.
Not a carpetbagger.
But I mean like, and also I think that like, my guess is that after this administration, for all the reasons that we've just previously been talking about, is that there may be an appetite in 2020 for some executive experience and not executive running a company, but executive like knowing what government is supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I think that he will be able to have, like you just said, things to point to that be like, look, I can actually do the things.
Yeah. Right. I've done this before. And in a state that is pretty renowned for being fairly broken most of the time. New York State, under his tenure, had a major scandal where the head of our assembly was indicted.
Yeah.
We had that weird breakdown where like the Republicans and the Democrats started meeting in separate sessions
and some
people changed parties. And it was like a weird, you know, like there was like a weird scandal and that took down a few people. I mean, shit is always going down in the state government in New York State.
It's
one of the worst gerrymandered states in the country.
He's also Catholic.
He's Catholic.
Which plays well in Rust Belt states. Better, actually, than being, like, an evangelical would if you're... obviously, you wouldn't be an evangelical if you were a Democrat. But, I mean, like, there are a lot of, like, Democratic
Jimmy
Catholic,
Carter was an evangelical.
That's true. Yes. But there's a lot of Democrats who are sort of moderates who would probably just vote for a Catholic.
Right.
Based on being Catholic themselves, which is ridiculous. But it's real.
Here's another thing that I don't know how I feel about him being the candidate for president, but I feel great about him running for one reason, which is that I do not want him to run for governor again. My mom has been saying this for a while, and she's absolutely right. Third-term governors, either third-term people do not get elected in New York State, or if they do, they bring everything down with them.
Yeah.
So you have the example of Bloomberg, who insisted on a third term as mayor, and the whole... thing came crashing down on his head.
Yeah.
Pataki, I believe, had a third term. Everyone was sick to death of him by the time he left.
Sure.
And she's worried, I think rightfully, that he would not win a third term, that it would leave room for a Republican to win because he would bounce it. You know, all the Democrats would be edged out. Yeah. And that would leave the state in Trump's America in a kind of precarious position.
Yeah.
So I think she's right about that. But I also don't know who is stepping up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm certainly not talking about all of these things that make him an interesting candidate in the sense that, I'm dying for him to run.
No, but it's an interesting prospect. It's interesting.
And I also think that, like, the last thing that I sort of, like, find him to maybe be, like, a decent choice is that I don't think he would be, like, out blustered.
Yeah.
By Trump.
No.
Or he would try to not be.
He'd also
anyway.
Be able to pull rank on Trump.
Well, true. Yes.
Because he's from a successful political dynasty in New York State, and Trump's from a family of asshats.
But I think for a lot of reasons, I don't know if this necessarily happened in the general or not, but I mean, like, I think Trump won that Republican primary by just being, like, the largest personality in the room. And I think to some level that also was maybe the case in the general.
Yeah.
And I don't think Cuomo would at least attempt to not allow that. You know, where some of these other fools folded.
Well, and I think he would also have a better sense of what Trump's deal is.
Right. What his
whole
game is.
He knows a bunch of idiots like Donald
Trump. Yeah,
He knows these people. Yeah. That's I think that there's a chance that no New Yorker will ever be elected president ever again.
Right.
And I want to say that we're lovely people.
Although, honestly, I think running against Trump might be the best chance to have a New Yorker
That's
elected
true.
Because, like, you can sort of, like, portray yourself as, like, the better type of New Yorker.
I said this I said in the general that the one thing Bernie Sanders would have had on Donald Trump is he gets to be from Brooklyn.
He's better at exactly.
He's he's like a more New Yorker-y New Yorker.
Totally. Yeah.
In any case, there are also some fun Democratic proxy wars going on in other places.
Yes.
There is a primary happening in Virginia to replace Terry McAuliffe as governor.
Yeah.
And so basically every establishment Democrat has endorsed one guy,
The Lieutenant Governor
Ralph Northam.
Right.
But Bernie Sanders stepped into the fray last week and endorsed Tom Perriello,
Perriello?
I think his name is Perriello.
Yeah.
You know what? I've never said his name out loud.
I haven't either.
He's a former congressman. We've heard of him before.
Yeah, for sure.
But he was not the favored son in this race.
No,
he wasn't. And now they're running neck and neck.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Right. It is. Yeah. Sanders said that Tom is committed to fighting the rigged economy and income inequality. He was the first major statewide candidate in Virginia to run on a $15 minimum wage and the first to say 2 years of community college should be tuition free.
Well, here is what I think is interesting that I think relates back to the to the Cuomo point. These, what we're going to see as a result, and so, and this is just sort of like my thoughts to anyone who's going to tell me that running a, you know, running a primary is stupid, that Bernie Sanders ruined everything for everyone. I know we talk about this all the time and you're sick of hearing about it. However, we are now seeing statewide races and state officials who are full establishment Democrats.
Right.
Both of these guys are on the right wing of the Democratic Party if you look at their records.
Yeah, neither of these, we'll tell you about it. I mean, neither of these guys are great. Like,
but
one
both
of
them see where the wind is blowing right now. And both of them are trying to move to the left to catch it. And that is why you have a primary.
That's what the,
because that the wind was blowing that way and now these people know it.
Yes, exactly.
Now Andrew Cuomo can pass free college educations for everyone. And even though he is basically a Republican, he's able to be championing some dumb thing he doesn't even care about. And it makes him look great. And it's also great.
Yes, exactly.
It's great for the people who live in New York State.
Yeah, but these two guys are literally trying to out progressive each other right now. And neither of them are. Northam, who's the lieutenant governor, we said, he's no lefty at all. I mean, he was once courted by the Republicans to switch parties. So, like, he was basically a Republican at one point. But since the primary started, he's been talking about his, like very strong support for abortion rights and gun control. And while that, probably to a lot of you who are listening to this, sounds like a bit of low-hanging fruit, like, oh, let's talk about abortion rights.
Yeah.
In Virginia, you're not super far removed from both guns and abortions being things, at least as Democrats, you just sort of tried to...
Never say.
You didn't say either of them, because...
He also talked about legalizing marijuana as a racial justice issue.
Right, exactly.
I mean, this is a guy, again, who was courted by Republicans.
Once courted, right, exactly. And same with Perillo. He was... voted for an unsuccessful amendment to the Affordable Care Act when he was in Congress that would have prevented insurance plans from covering abortions from receiving public subsidies. And the day that he announced his campaign to run for governor, he wrote a long post apologizing for that vote and talking about how great and wonderful abortion rights are on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, he knew. He was like, he knew that that vote was going to be problematic for him. And he was like, I got to move to the left of that vote.
He was endorsed by the NRA at one point.
Yes, exactly.
And called the NRA the epitome of people-powered politics.
Yeah.
And a month ago called it a nutjob extremist organization.
Yes, exactly.
I mean,
he had also joined a bipartisan effort when he was in the Virginia congressional delegation to allow oil and gas drilling off the state's coast. And
now he's against
offshore drilling. And not only is he against offshore drilling, he's also come out against two pipelines that were supposed to go through Virginia, which both McAuliffe and Northam were in favor of. So these guys are literally people who were like at one point like gun and abortion loving Republicans.
Would have run as Republicans in California.
Right. Exactly. Who are now like. Who are trying to get Bernie Sanders to come and campaign for them.
Yeah.
Who's a socialist.
Exactly.
Like, that's where we are in America today, and I like it.
I'm for it. I'm in.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the impact of that, of just having, of saying the ideas has been massive.
Yes.
As it always is.
Yeah.
The impact of having ideas that were verboten just a couple years ago,
yep,
and realizing that people care about those issues and are behind those issues. People want free college educations in this country. People want single-payer healthcare.
That's right.
There are all these things that people want.
Right.
And now, and also, people don't want to be talking about abortions anymore. We're sick to death of hearing about fucking abortions.
Yeah.
You know? We don't want to be talking about how we can't pass gun control legislation because it's going to curtail our rights.
Yeah.
People don't want to be talking about this shit anymore.
No.
And so, finally, there, because we've had the clarity of having somebody who was able to say these things in a concise and extreme way that allowed you to realize, oh, people weren't voting for us because they were far to our left. They weren't voting for us because they don't agree with what we think.
It's given these people
a path. It's given these
people some cover. And it's given them the language, too.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
exactly.
Oh, God. Thank God
for
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, that's the only thing we have going for us right now. The whole rest of the world is a shit show. I'm sure that all of you Clinton listeners are like, yeah, but he ruined the election. Obviously, we don't agree with you on that.
He didn't.
But we're also going to state that there are going to be some long-standing, long-game benefits to having had this primary happen the way that it did.
Yes.
And that there are many reasons that Hillary Clinton lost, but none of them were, you know, Bernie Sanders or,
Not one of them
was Bernie Sanders. Yeah.
All right. Next is the story that we hinted at
and
the very top.
And sorry, it's an hour and a half later. But it's...
Oh, God, is it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, oh yeah. Shit. We're at an hour 30 right now. But you guys, we're going to power through because this is the best story of the week.
Yeah. So this is later in the podcast because when we were pulling stories from it, I think, like, yes, Saturday and yesterday, it didn't seem like it was going to, like, blow up in the way that it did. Like,
today,
where literally a governor was in jail today.
Just blew up. Yeah, today the sitting governor of Alabama was literally in jail.
Right. And he has now...
He's now resigned.
He has now since resigned. He has also pled guilty to two counts of campaign, I don't know,
fraud or
whatever. He has to do a bunch of community service, doctor community service, by the way, I think I read, because he's a dermatologist.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but he...
his impeachment hearings began today.
Right. They began today. Republicans, his own party, have been trying to get him resign for literally years.
He's the love gov.
At this point. He's been dubbed the love gov. I have to apologize to all of you for not knowing about this until now because I feel like we should have been talking about this since like 2015.
I know.
But, you know,
we don't know what's happening in Alabama sometimes.
Exactly. That's what it is.
So in any case,
yeah.
On Wednesday, the State Ethics Commission announced that they found probable cause to believe that Governor Bentley had misused state resources to cover up an affair he was having with his mistress, who was an advisor of his, Rebecca Caldwell Mason.
This Wednesday report came in like this sort of bombshell report that had been 2 years in the making, basically,
yes,
where they sort of were looking into all of these things.
He was also using campaign cash to pay for legal fees.
To pay for her legal fees. Yeah, exactly. Oh, he has to pay those back, too, as part of his plea deal. So,
but all of the details of this story are amazing.
Right. Well, we first found out about this. Well, we first found out about it yesterday.
Right.
But
Alabama first
found out about it and dubbed him the love gov when his wife at the time recorded a phone conversation with he and this Rebecca woman.
Caldwell Mason.
Right. And he said something to the effects of, if we're going to, oh, baby, let me know what I am going to do when I start locking the door. Oh, he was like, if we're going to do what we did the other day,
we're going to have to start locking the door.
And so not much after that, his wife filed for divorce. So we knew that things were afoot at that point,
basically. By the way, he also once sent a text message to his wife, his wife Diane, read, "I love you, Rebecca."
Yes.
He's still maintaining that he was not having an affair with Rebecca Mason.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because there is so much evidence in these phone calls recorded by his wife and...
Yeah,
the
and
fact
text,
that
we also, this report
he was calling
that came out,
Mason baby in meetings, official meetings.
Yes, we found out in this report that he once answered the hotel door in his boxer shorts.
Thinking it was her.
Thinking that it was her, but it was like hotel staff.
Right. She sometimes spent the night at his pool house in the governor's mansion.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, also he's 30 years older than her.
Yeah.
So much of this is gross.
Yeah, he's in his mid-70s.
Also, and just as a side note about him.
Yeah.
Governor Bentley likes to pop into church sometimes and teach Sunday school.
Teach a little Sunday school.
So, gross.
Love Gov.
Yeah. Real gross.
In any case,
people have been trying to get him to resign for years. And he was just like, nah.
Yeah.
Not going to.
Nope, not doing it. Even like 3 days ago, he was like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
But then, so after this report was released last week and the Alabama Supreme Court okayed impeachment hearings to start on Saturday of this week, and it all came crashing down pretty quick after that.
Yeah.
It took less than a week to get him in jail. The impeachment hearings began today.
There's a mugshot.
There's a mugshot online.
If you want, you can find it. He's smiling, which you're not supposed to do in your mugshot, so clearly he didn't know. But,
right, exactly. But so, in any case, Mason lost her job years ago.
Oh, yeah, she quit, of course, because she was the man in power gets to keep the job,
exactly.
Obviously. But
that as a final hilarious note to this entire story, Mason's husband, because she's also married, is still on the government payroll because he leads the Office of Faith-Based and Volunteer Service.
What is that, by the way?
His salary, $91,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's a lot in Alabama money.
I thought to myself as I was pulling this, I was like, that seems like a lot. So I went and I said, Google, what's the median income in Alabama? It's much less than half of that.
It's $41,000 a year.
Yeah.
So, in any case,
anyway,
so this has been the most exciting day of sex scandal.
Right. Exactly.
History.
And
there's a second one. Because this week there was also a Bill O'Reilly sex scandal.
Right. Well, we found out last week, the New York Times reported, that he has had to pay like something like $13 million worth
to five different women. Because of
sexual harassment allegations.
What a shock.
Yes. Right. Trump kicked off what Trump had deemed sexual assault awareness month, April, by the way, which is rich coming from him at all. You know, king of the pussy grabbers.
Exactly.
He said that... O'Reilly shouldn't have settled. O'Reilly's a good guy, and he shouldn't have settled.
That's how
like, that was
off
like
April.
Literally like on April 1st or 2nd, which is just was so
kicked
rich.
Off April Fool's Month.
Yeah.
In any case,
yeah.
Companies have started pulling out of the O'Reilly Factor.
Like all
big
of them.
Time. There are just 7 advertisers left on the O'Reilly Factor.
There's room for like 60.
Yeah, there's room for 60. The series runs as many as 40 during a typical night.
Oh, that's what I meant. 40, not yet. 40, yeah.
Well, there are 60 companies that have dropped out.
Right, yeah.
They ran seven of a potential
40.
Right. They can run as many as 40. Only 7 now are with him still.
Yeah.
So out of these 60 companies that he had once had as advertisers on the O'Reilly Factor, he now only has 7.
Yikes.
And they were only able to run 7 on a night where they would normally run like 40.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. Of course, you know, the people who
There was
are...
a big Twitter campaign to get companies off.
Yeah.
Like I remember I was looking at Twitter and was like, Ben Bath & Beyond is pulled. And I was like, why are any of these people still advertising?
Of course, they will find advertisers because it remains... in its 15th year as the highest rated cable news show.
Yeah.
It hasn't lost viewership because these are the same people who voted for
the
Pussy Grabber.
Care?
So it's like, what do they give a rip about, you know, these dumb women who he sexually, you know,
women
harassed.
Women are idiots.
I mean, they deserved it. They shouldn't be in the workplace anyway.
Exactly.
So like, get real.
Exactly.
Sexual
harassment.
They were what is that?
For it.
It's sexual harassment.
It's locker room talk, Brent.
God.
It's nothing more.
Seriously.
But so, in any case, he's going to stay on the air, but
of course
we're going to be able to keep an eye on.
There are enough evil corporations who are okay with sexual harassment, I think.
See, these corporations weren't doing it because they're not evil. They were not doing it because they also need customers.
Well, that's the thing. Yes, I know.
What you need is companies that only are trying to sell to the O'Reilly demographic.
That's exactly. And I'm saying that those
1-800 mattress exist. Or whatever the mattress companies that advertise on everything. Maybe they don't care.
Right. Some sort of sleep apnea
company. Something
like that. Yeah.
Yeah. A thyroid medicine of some sort.
That's what I was just about to say. Yeah. Some sort of,
But, I mean.
Barco lounger company.
Let me tell you, those companies aren't going to pay as much
as
Bed Bath & Beyond did.
No.
So.
They're not.
Just saying.
Yeah.
In any case, in final news, remember when we went to see Michelle Bachman explain it all?
I do, and it was great.
It's resulted in a lifelong fascination with Michelle Bachman that I currently still am suffering from.
Yeah.
I think about Michelle Bachman more.
Yeah.
Than a person should think about a person who's not in office and has no relevance to my
life. That's right. Yeah.
Well, on April 1st, April Fool's Day, if you will.
Yes.
She gave an interview on the radio program hosted by Jan Markell, Understanding the Times with Jan Markell.
And from the quote that we're going to tell you about, I have a feeling that Jan Markell or Markell or whatever doesn't really understand the times very well. I think that he or she probably understands biblical times quite well.
Maybe. Or at least has chosen to understand certain kinds of biblical times in certain ways.
Right. I bet he or she knows all of the stories from the Old Testament.
So true.
Really well, probably.
In any case, during this interview, Michelle Bachmann implied that the election results were somehow God's retribution for the transgender community's strides towards equality.
Oh.
You know how it goes.
Yeah. Here's what she said. She said, we were in a situation where the president of the United States, on his own, just issued a sheet of paper and said overnight, every single public school in the country would have to have the girls' bathrooms open to the boys and the boys' bathrooms open to the girls.
Horror.
What we were told from the White House is that when we look at our body in a shower, our body isn't reality anymore. So we actually get to choose if we're a boy, if we're a girl. And then she noted that Trump's rise to power just wasn't in the natural. This was in the supernatural, where God sovereignly, I believe, answered the prayers of believers beseeching him, and he's given us a reprieve.
There's so many interesting things to unpack about that. Yes. Among them, the fact that she believes that Trump's rise to power was not natural.
Well, it certainly wasn't.
No, but I mean, like, her sort of read on the unpredictability and weirdness of the Trump phenomenon is like God intervened because we were crying out for help because now boys can use the girls' bathroom in public schools.
I mean, that is what these people think that God does.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he has pretty specific things that he's up to.
I mean, these people think that God wrote the Constitution, lest we forget. Right. I mean, like,
That's true.
You know, that's what they think that he's up to.
Jan Markell agreed. When you have the White House lit with the colors of the gay rainbow. Oh, that was June 2015.
No.
Bad day.
No.
I think that it was a low point for a lot of people, and it just seemed like every perversion, including this transgender obsession, was just being celebrated. I think God said, enough.
Enough. And God said,
right.
Enough. On the eighth day, God said, enough.
Enough with these transgender gay fools.
If I see that rainbow flag one more on the White House. Never again on my watch.
Donald Trump will be the president.
Jesus Christ. I mean, God bless her.
Yeah, Michelle Bachmann. As brilliant as she's always
been. Another person who really has the convictions.
She is a true believer.
Yeah.
And I applaud her for it. I don't applaud her deciding to share those convictions with other people.
No.
But I think it's nice that she has things that she knows.
Right.
For her, it's nice.
That she knows to be true.
Yeah. She's a woman who... She has her truth. That's all she has, but it's something. She lives it every day.
And isn't that what we all should be striving towards?
So true.
Right now? Michelle Bachmann, a guide for all of us.
A guide for all of us. The gay and transgendered among us included.
Oh, God.
If she can live her truth of being an asshat.
That's right.
I don't see why you can't come out as
and see whatever transgender. The fuck you want.
Exactly. And with that.
That's it.
We say... Goodbye.
We did it. Hope you stayed the whole way through because...
You missed the best part if you didn't. That's on you. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.